It's about what, like, the workday is stressful, whether you, you know, have a deadline or a quota, or you're trying to, you know, hit revenue numbers or push a product. You are carrying so much stress during the workday. And so that is what people are bringing into these sessions. But then we ask them how they're feeling afterwards. And it's like lifted, inspired, creative, closer with my teammates.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back. I've got an amazing guest to share with you today, but first, I want to make sure that if you're listening to this podcast from your office or your home and you're not watching it on YouTube, you should give it a try. All of my episodes have a video version, so if you haven't yet watched it, check it out, especially for the episodes where I have guests. It just makes it a little more three-dimensional. Now, have you ever wondered what comedy can teach you about leadership and culture? Today, I'm joined by Kevin Hubschman, who went from selling software to selling laughs. We're talking about failure, resilience, and how a dose of humor can shift the way you lead. Kevin is the founder of Laugh.Events and the voice behind the LaughRx newsletter. He went from building a career in SaaS, software as a service, to building a movement around laughter, improv, and the life-changing skills we can learn from comedians. In this episode, Kevin and I explore how comedy sharpens leadership, strengthens listening and curiosity, builds trust on teams, and helps us embrace failure as progress. So if you ever thought laughter was just entertainment, this conversation will show you how it's actually a strategy for culture and connection. I hope you enjoy. All right. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. I am so excited to have my guest, Kevin Hubschman, here with me today. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I just want to jump right in and start with the tagline on your LinkedIn profile. When I was digging around to learn more about you, says that you're a comedy nerd using skills you've learned from comedians to help professionals unclench. I used to sell SaaS, and now I sell LaaS, laughter as a service. Tell me what this means and how you got here.
Yeah, so I mean, I've always been a comedy lover my whole life. And when I moved to New York out of college, I, you know, was trying to get into the corporate world, but I was also simultaneously trying to dip my feet into comedy. And so while I was trying to start my career at a software company, this company called Splash, I was one of the first 10 employees there and just kind of like doing whatever they needed. But I also, at the same time, I was doing improv comedy after work and just kind of getting those reps in and just getting acclimated to the altitude of improv comedy. And it was very fun. And I really started to see, as I would do improv at night after work, I come in the next day and everything kind of just like felt a lot easier. I felt like I could collaborate better with people. I was listening better. My communication skills were much stronger. I was just kind of more pleasant to be around as well. I was lighter and having more fun. That I kind of was doing that simultaneously at this software company, also doing comedy. You know, eventually I became the first salesperson there, and then the company really grew tremendously. You know, like I said, first 10 employees, eventually it grew to be 200. I know it got sold last summer. It was a really fun journey, but I always would be looking at comedians, especially New York comedians. New York is the capital of comedy, in my opinion. And I got to rub elbows with some really great improvisers, but then I also got into stand-up comedy. You know, once my band broke up, so to speak, of my improv group, I started to explore other places. So I got into stand-up as well. And then eventually I even threw my own comedy shows at my office because they had this awesome setup. So, and they encourage you to throw events. It was an event marketing software. So we did our own events, and I would just invite the best comedians. I would just DM them on Instagram, and I'd say, come perform on this show. It's going to be an amazing crowd. And so I also got to really work closely with these comedians that a lot of them now have Netflix specials. So these were some of the greatest comedians out there who had had 10 plus years, 15 plus years, some of them 20 plus years of reps being comedians and really working through that grind of perfecting their craft. And so I always had admired comedians, whether it was improv comedians, stand-up comedians, sketch comedians, anybody that was using this craft and building this product that was their comedy skills. And I always felt that there was such a correlation because I myself was using it at work, and I kind of got to be my own guinea pig of saying, this really works. And so after, when the pandemic started, I actually moved into this full time, which is, as you can imagine, a bizarre time to get full time into comedy. Yeah. But we went into corporate comedy. We said, hey, let's get into this corporate space. And we started hosting virtual comedy shows because people really needed laughter, obviously, during yeah. those times. And so the demand was crazy high, but also the comedians were out of work. You know, they weren't legally allowed to perform anymore. So that's even when I started to get deeper into it. I started to work with comedians, and I got to see their sets, not just once or twice. I got to see them like 100 times. And it was like, I got to see it like once at 10 a.m. and then again at 12 p.m. and then again at 4 p.m. because we were doing so much volume back then. And I got to see like how they approached every set and all the different mannerisms that they had and just how they approached everything and how professional they were. And I really got to see that live. So I got to see these people that were just experts in their craft approaching it every single day. And that was really inspiring. And then when people started to go back in person, that's when we started to expand out to the stuff I talked about at the beginning, which is how do we bring actual comedy skills that I learned in improv and stand-up? How do we bring those to organizations who are looking for fun team building, but also professional development? I think a lot of folks get caught up in like, we just want to get out of the office and we just want to have fun. And they think that that comes in the form of let's have a drink. Let's, you know, have some, you know, nachos. Let's do a murder mystery. And I'm not saying that those aren't a blast, but I'm saying that you can have your cake and eat it too. You can do something that's really fun and learn a lot from it. And that's what Laughing and Development ultimately turned into. And it's a really amazing experience that we have that, you know, we're in 30 plus cities across the country. We're doing events internationally as well. So it's been a really fun journey.
That's awesome. So let's dig into that a little bit. Of course I get the entertainment value. But you mentioned skills and transferable skills. And so what did you learn as you watched those comedians and as you did it yourself? Like, what are those transferable skills that you see between the comedians and the workplace?
Yeah, I think the number one thing that I personally found when I was doing improv and then I'd come into work and be able to, you know, use these skills, it was a lot of it was listening. A lot of it was active listening, and it was slowing your own brain down to not kind of like vomit out your own ideas. And there's a really popular phrase that I would hear, which was from my instructor, which was F your good idea. And I was like, that's harsh, but it was also like it was a reminder of going, why don't you wait a second? Why don't we kind of marinate in the group and let's listen to that, what that person has to say. And maybe let's listen to another person and let's take this like it's a hopscotch, jump rope. Let's wait for our turn where we can also add on to everything. And so that was my biggest learning, especially in sales. You know, when I was getting up in the sales world, when I was talking to clients, I had to listen a lot. And at first I was pitching. I was going, here's why you have to do this, and this is why this is good. And I was so focused on getting my own words out that my talk time was so much higher than their talk time. Mm-hmm. And so I also saw that I was starting to shrink my talk time. I was starting also, comedians are so curious. And with whether it's improv or stand-up, improvisers, when they're on stage, they need to know like why you're doing what you're doing, and they're trying to figure out the scene that you're actually in, that the person that initiated it is in. So they're gonna like kind of be curious in that moment. And stand-up comedians, and you can see it all over the internet and all over Netflix and whatnot, they're naturally curious people. They're constantly questioning, why is that the way it is? What was the origin of that? So I think also being really curious was really important. And so I started asking a lot more questions and listening to answers and hearing problems and again, not interrupting and really doing my best to listen and take action from there. And that was my playbook. I used to have a playbook that was like, ask these questions, pitch these points. And suddenly it turned into, you know, ask questions that you have in your mind, but also don't be afraid to go and divert from what your plan was, because you might even uncover something that you weren't prepared for.
Yeah, that's so true. So listening, active listening, curiosity, and those are not just leadership skills, right? Those are great team skills, individual skills, you know, just bettering ourselves as a person. And I love you said a phrase you just said is laughing in development. I'm assuming that's kind of your play on learning and development. Is there a program that you have? Tell me what the laughing in development is.
Yeah. So actually that came because every time we asked people if they wanted to do improv, they were like, that sounds terrifying. So I was like, that needs to change. And so I started to break down, like, what are we actually doing in these sessions? And the truth was, we are laughing with one another. And that's what the team building component is. And when you laugh with your coworkers, you are creating trust. You know, when you laugh with people, you're releasing serotonin. And so you are that trust hormone is allowing people to connect better. So that was that laughing component. And that's what we meant by laughing, of the laughing and development. And obviously the development speaks for itself. It's the professional development component. It's these skills that I told you about: communication, listening, you know, creating a supportive environment, taking risks, all of these different aspects that you see when you do improv and you work with people. And, you know, it didn't help enough that I would say, hey, you just got to trust me that improv is fun. And it's honestly the greatest thing that you could do for your organization. And they would be sold, right? I could talk to you and you'd be like, that's amazing. I get it. I'm in. But then how do you talk to your team about that later on? So we were like, hey, let's just focus on the fact that this is going to be fun and we are going to be laughing. And we're going to also get something out of it. So let's kind of lead with that thing, that it's not whose line is it anyways. And I think that is the biggest misconception of improv, that people respect improv. And I think that's why they're scared of it. They really respect the art craft because it is so hard. And it is if you watch a bad improv show, you know it's bad. It's like, whoa, this is tough. But if you watch a good one, it's magic. You are literally watching some of the greatest comedy, the hardest I've ever laughed. And I have seen thousands of shows, and the hardest I've ever laughed has always been consistently from great improv shows. And it's because those folks are so good. So there's a lot of respect that goes into that. And people say, I can't do that. But improv is not applied improv, which is what laughing and development is, is not about performance. There's no performative aspect of it. It's about creating a very supportive environment with the people in the room and kind of dipping your toes in to start with the activities that we have in the beginning that just get people comfortable and being vulnerable and kind of allowing people to feel like, oh, I can make mistakes in this room and everyone's equal. And that's like what that whole the beginning of our sessions are about. And then like about 15 minutes into the session, everyone's comfortable and you suddenly see that person that you thought that you never even heard speak before says the wildest, funniest thing. And they're not trying to be funny. That's the thing. They're just kind of saying what's on their mind. And that's, again, what improv is about. It's not about being funny. And in fact, when you go for the funny thing, when you try to say the funny thing, you might actually derail the whole experience. But if you just add on to it, you support your partner, the scene as a whole is going to be really strong. And it kind of also takes that ego out of it as well. And you're not like, I'm going to be the one that gets the glory. Because if you get the glory, then the rest of your team might suffer, and ultimately, the show might suffer.
Yeah. Two things that you've said that I want to touch on. The first is kind of what laughter does, built, increasing serotonin. And I heard I was listening to a podcast with a cardiovascular physician, and he was saying that laughter is one of the things that stimulates your, that not the flight, the fight or flight response that we are all living in, that sympathetic part of our nervous system, but it invokes the parasympathetic. And so it really is, there are health benefits to laughing. And he even said that there are groups now, like laughing groups, where you just go and you laugh. Like that's all you do is you just sit there and laugh, and it's just really good for your nervous system.
There's something called laughter yoga that's out
Oh,
there,
wow.
and it's literally forcing your body to laugh. It's like, hey, everyone, we're gonna like get a good belly laugh in, and you're training. I like to say you're tricking your body really into being like, and I say trick because it's like you're not laughing at anything, but you're laughing. You're forcing your body to laugh, and that's going to trick the rest of your brain biologically to like be like, oh, this is great. Because when you laugh, there's a flood of endorphins. And also simultaneously, your cortisol levels are dropping. So that stress hormone, excuse me, that stress hormone is dropping. And so you're kind of having this like, let bad feelings going down, good feelings going up. This is really great. Like that's how we want it to be.
Yeah.
And so like those are the three things I like to focus on is the serotonin component, the endorphins component, and the lowering of the cortisol. And I think I ask people before and after these laughing and development sessions, how did you feel going into it? How did you feel afterwards? And almost never are people saying, I felt amazing going into it. I was gonna kill this thing. They're always like, I'm so nervous. I'm tense. I don't, like what, not even about the session. It's
Yeah.
not even as much about the session, and it's about the energy they're bringing into it.
Yeah.
It's about what like the work day is stressful, whether you have a deadline or a quota, or you're trying to hit revenue numbers or push a product. You are carrying so much stress during the workday. And so that is what people are bringing into these sessions. But then we ask them how they're feeling afterwards. And it's like lifted, inspired, creative, closer with my teammates. And it's those surveys, which we use obviously to see like, hey, how are we doing? But that's actually what drives us to keep going and say like, we're actually making an impact on people that are saying like, this is the best thing I've done. I wish we could do more of this. And teams can do more of it. It's like certainly the sessions that are run by us are very calculated, and we make them specific to the group. But you can be doing different types of exercises with your team to create that like very close environment.
Yeah. And one of the other thing that you said that I wanted to touch on is trust. And I heard another comedian that does improv talk about how backstage before they go on, it's this kind of, they go around and say, I've got your back. I've got your back. I've got you. So that you feel, it feels safe going out there because you know that they're not gonna, no one's gonna let each other fail. And I never thought about that. Like when I think about improv, I think about like being dangled out there just on your own, you know? So that gave me a little more comfort. Tell me how else, is that part of what you do, and how else do you build team trust through improv?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say, like, a lot of people, I think people think comedy, comedian can be an overarching term, but improv and stand-up are completely different things. I like to think of, like, you know, a stand-up is like a tennis player or golf player. You know, they're playing for themselves and they're playing to work on their specific craft. And I like to look at improv as a lot like basketball. You know, there might be really strong players, but there are those glue guys or girl women that are actually like making the whole team click, you know? And that is what improv is about. It's about that team dynamic. And I love that you brought that up. Like, I have your back. When I was doing improv shows and we were going around, like, you know, we would do, you know, you're doing stuff to already know, like, I've got your back. And we would do like freestyle rapping, just like, hey, let's, and by that, it was just like, let's rhyme the thing before it. And then you'd like mess up and no one cares. That's like the whole idea is like, there was no right answer. And it was like, how do we create this environment where failure is actually a bonus, you know, like failure, fun can come from failure and fun can come from mistakes. And it's only a mistake if you stop the train and say, this is a mistake and we need to fix this. And it's a lot of the times improv and trust, it's all about creating that supportive environment. So like, what language are you using when you're communicating with your team? You know, there's a great exercise that we do that I love. It's about like, let's bring, we're going to a picnic. What are we going to bring? The first time around, we're going to say, I'm bringing a blanket. And then the next person's going to say, no, but, and then they're going to say the item that they're going to bring. So no, but I'm bringing a speaker. And so everyone goes around and you're like, that didn't seem like a lot. This picnic kind of sounds bad. not good vibes at this picnic. And then they go for the second time and we say, okay, do that. But yes, or is now. So it's, I'm bringing a blanket. Yes. Or I'm bringing a speaker. And again, now it seems like everyone's kind of on their own team. Like, that's cool, but, or like, or this could be better. And then we ask them to do it again, but we say yes. And now it's like, I'm bringing a blanket. Yes. And I'm bringing a speaker. Yes. And I'm bringing Cheetos. Like, now it's a party. Now everyone's having fun. And that is like really what it's about. It's about having each other's back. It's about using that right communication language. And it's so powerful what our brains hear when we hear no or but or. It's like a stop sign that's saying like, hey, slow down. And then we just don't want to keep it going. And so that language is so important. And then when, like, another thing that we do in our sessions is, hey, get up there and say something and everyone is going to cheer you. No matter what you say, we're going to cheer the heck out of you. And so it could be the funniest, they could be sitting down and they're like, I'm going to come up with the funniest thing here. And then there's another person that's like, has nothing really to say. The cheers are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how do we create that environment where everyone's answers are equal and everybody, we're just kind of trying. It's that mentality of no bad ideas, but no bad ideas has to come when a group is saying, I love everything that you're saying. I got your back. We're in this together.
Yeah. That's so great. Really building that trust. I attended a conference last week, and one of the things that the founder of the event had us do every time before a speaker came up, as they were coming to the stage, she had us give them a standing ovation before their speech. And it just completely changed the energy for the speaker, I'm sure, like giving them more confidence. And then just as the audience, keeping us energized and invigorated. So I love that idea of, regardless of what they say, you know, giving them that positive reinforcement.
And as a stand-up comedian, like, that's mainly the types of performances I do now is in stand-up comedy. And that is so right. When that energy is so good to start, yeah, like you said, the audience is such a huge part of the equation. And when you translate that back into the workforce, that's everybody that's listening to your presentation. That's everyone that's listening to your idea. That's everybody that is, you know, brainstorming with you. And it's really a group effort.
And how cool would a culture be if everybody was supportive of each other and, you know, and it felt like a safe environment in the workplace all, you know, all the time, which is a little aspirational. But I definitely want to make sure that before we close that we're getting, you know, that people find out how they can work with you. But if they for some reason can't work with you, are there a couple things that you would have that people could do on their own in the workplace?
Yeah, I mean, I have, you know, I have a great newsletter where I try to, you know, uncover and unpack a lot of this stuff. It's called LaughRx. LaughRx.laugh.events is where you can find it. There are so many different types of improv exercises. That one I just did is really fun, that yes and or but. It's kind of a good primer. And I think that's kind of, do you need to do a 60-minute improv session to start every like meeting you have? Like, no. But is there a warm-up that you can do to not just wake everybody up, but to like prime the room to say, this is what this is about. This is what this room is about, and we're going to kind of get the best out of it. So that game is a lot of fun. Another game that I love to play that your audience could benefit from that's easy is, hey, we're going to go around the room and we're going to do a one word at a time story. And we are going to, we're going to say like, you're going to say one word. It explains it in itself, but you go around and the first time people are going to probably try to like be funny, right? They're going to say, I'm going to get that funny word. I'm going to say, you know, bazooka in the middle of it. And it makes no sense, but it's a fun word to say. But then you say, hey, go around. And if you get an A or a the or an and, own it and enjoy it. Because if it was not for those words, the story doesn't make any sense. We have just a word salad of fun sounding words, which, you know, have a quick ephemeral feeling to them. But let's go around and let's make a story together. And I always love that because it's a primer for like, some people are going to get the glory. Some people are going to be lifted on the shoulders and say, hey, you got the funny word, you got the punchline. But if it was not for those words that connect everything, that make everything go, the story wouldn't make any sense. And it wouldn't allow the person that got the big word and the fun word, it wouldn't allow them to have had that moment if you didn't connect it with an A or an and or a word that is like not as fun. So that is another one that I really love doing because it kind of is the epitome of a team. You know, not everyone's going to get the glory, but if it wasn't for the glue folks and people that are actually in there, you know, setting people up, so to speak, you know, the setters in volleyball, you know, you wouldn't be able to spike it.
Yeah. Perfect. I love that. Okay. Well, before we wrap, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you, you want to make sure that my listeners know?
Well, I think one thing that is very, important is around failure. And I think that there is what I have learned the most from comedians is their ability to fail and their, you know, their fearlessness, not just going on stage. What I also learned that was really interesting is a lot of comedians are nervous going on stage, and nervousness is actually a very good feeling to have. It means that you care about it. It means that you want it to go well. That's where it's not about speaking in front of an audience. Obviously they're comfortable doing that, but people can get nervous because they want it to go well. So I think that what's really important is to, how do you find different moments to make yourself feel more comfortable so that you're not so scared of that failure? And I think in improv, there's a very famous line by Del Close called follow the fear. And he's encouraging all of his students to go towards the thing that scares you, because when you do that, your brain is, it's good for neuroplasticity, and you are actually getting those reps of being like, this isn't going to be so scary the next time. And so obviously there's a lot of stuff that you can do as a team that's important, but how can you as an individual, you know, rewire that part in your brain that said, that's scary, I got to run away from that? How do you just do it a little bit? How do you create micro stages to fail? Having a coffee chat, sharing an idea, you know, giving a new part of your pitch, you know, just knowing that it wasn't so scary, because that's really all it is. Your body doesn't know about the feeling and it's not comfortable with it. So when it happens, it's scary. But when it happens enough, your body is like, it, okay, whatever, on to the next one.
I think that's such great wisdom and insight, because the world, I mean, everything is just changing so fast. And in the workplace, I think leadership roles are changing. And so for individuals, whether it's a leader or a team member or an individual contributor, to be able to kind of have the mindset of just trying something small, not being afraid to fail. Something that a mentor told me was just do it messy. Like, if you're afraid, just do it. And it's okay if it's a little messy at first. Like when I started this podcast, you know, it's, I didn't know exactly what I was going to talk about, but I knew that I wanted to use my voice for good. And so I love that you're talking about these micro stages, not being afraid to fail, just really, really insightful. Kevin, it's been so delightful. I hate that we're already out of time. I'm going to put your newsletter link in the show notes, and how they can find you, your website.
Yeah, laugh.events is the website. It's the name of the company and the website, so we made it easy there. And then, yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn, Kevin Hupschman. I look forward to connecting with folks.
Thank you so much for what you're doing. Really appreciate you.
And thank you so much for having me.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much to Kevin Hupschman for reminding us that laughter isn't just fun. It's medicine for our teams, our culture, and ourselves. Until next time, I'm Wendy Brand, helping you build intentional cultures where people and performance thrive. And if you haven't yet, please go check out the episode on YouTube and like and subscribe. Thanks so much. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.